Hi, everyone. Welcome to Waste 360's Nothing Wasted podcast. On every episode, we invite the most interesting people in waste, recycling, and organics to sit down with us and chat candidly about their thoughts, their work, this unique industry, and so much more. So thanks for listening and enjoy this episode.
So I don't think that I can handle introducing these three guys. So I'll let them handle their introductions, and then I'll go last. But the approach to what we're going to take here is we're going to take an Oprah interview approach. So I'm Oprah. So it's not like I'm not going to just sit here and ask questions. I'm definitely going to be giving my opinion and insight as well to the conversation. But we're all really excited to be here. So we'll start with Avelio and work back this way.
Awesome for beauty.
That's right. Youngest to oldest.
So my name is Avelio Matos. I host Package Design Unboxed. I'm a packaging designer, and I help brands transition from unsustainable to sustainable packaging in a variety of different ways, as well as lead design teams for them. And I met these guys about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We all launched podcasts about the same time. Met John Quinn, and he changed my mind about plastics, which I thought was impossible.
So. Also, how can they follow you on TikTok?
They can follow me on TikTok.
See?
At Professor Packaging, I can't even remember.
Professor.
Packaging Professor, they know what it is. I don't even know what it is.
Which
one? Because I taught at ASU, packaging at ASU.
Well, yeah, but what was your, is it Packaging Professor or Professor Packaging?
I think it's Professor Packaging.
I think it is too. Yeah, look it up.
We encourage you to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Because packaging on TikTok is huge. It's Professor Packaging.
At least on this stage it is.
Yes, that's right.
Corey.
Thank you. I'm Corey Connors, the host of Sustainable Packaging Podcast with Corey Connors, and Sustainable Packaging Consultant for Landsberg Aurora. And I'm just honored to be sitting with these fine gentlemen up here. The package deal, as they call us in the industry.
Yes.
This is the first time we've met in person.
It's true.
And we feel like there were lights and stars in the sky aligning. It was really an honor to experience that today. So thank you.
No doubt. Hey, everybody. Hello. I'm Adam Peek. Actually, my title has changed. So I'm the Senior Vice President of Sales at Myers Printing in Minneapolis. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I host the People of Packaging podcast. I have five kids and one wife, and I love hip hop music and the Denver Nuggets. And I'm excited to be in Las Vegas talking about packaging.
For sure.
and all sorts of good stuff. I am also on the TikToks.
Yeah.
As a which on the internet. And I'm packaging pastor.
Yes.
There, because I wasn't creative, and I am a pastor by trade, and I work in the packaging industry. So
and together, how many views are we at? Like, I don't know, 35 million?
Random people like packaging TikTok.
TikToks.
And yeah, I've learned absolutely that they're very random. I've been hit on, actually. I was very proud of that. So I let my wife know that I'm a pretty big deal.
She knows.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
She knows.
So my TikTok presence is nowhere near these guys. My social media presence is, I don't know. It's nowhere at the levels of all three of you. But
You've got a sign out in front of the building.
This is like
a celebrity right here.
This is 40 under 40 J. Quinn packaged.
That's right. That is.
We're 3 over 40.
So I'm Jonathan Quinn. I'm the Director of Market Development and Sustainability at Pregis. I grew up around the flexible packaging industry. I have pictures of me in a box of resin when I was 2, and I was in the lab doing film testing when I was 5, because it was the cool thing to do. Probably not, but that was what I thought.
That actually explains a lot.
But I've really enjoyed, so throughout the pandemic, we were able to, all of us were basically connected through Clubhouse, which is another social media app that got really big during the pandemic, and then
on the internet,
and then not
yeah
much anymore. But yeah. Anyway, the real focus of the conversation today. And feel free, if anybody has any questions, comments, you probably are like, who are these four guys and what are they doing here? Right. We're going to talk about sustainability, and we're going to talk about sustainability as it pertains to many different materials. And that's, we all kind of have our swim lanes that we fit into. And I obviously am the plastics guy, and I'm proud to be the plastics guy in social media.
Don't you have a pair of Converse shoes?
I do.
That say, like, buy plastic, live fantastic?
Buy plastic, live fantastic. Got a hashtag, follow it. And I was thinking I should have wore those shoes yesterday.
You really screwed 40 that up, buddy.
40. I really screwed that one up.
It's okay.
But
there's grace for you.
But I think first question, and we'll just throw it out to the group, is, what are the key trends kind of in your areas that are associated with sustainable packaging? And why do you believe that they have staying power?
Rochambeau.
Let's go.
You start, package designer.
Yeah, so from a packaging design standpoint, what I'm seeing from brands is, I guess let's look at what we saw before, right? And we've seen brands focus on recyclability, where a lot of brands thought that recycling meant sustainability. And we know today that that doesn't necessarily mean that, because you can overpackage something, you can use too much material that is recyclable, but doesn't necessarily make a difference if you're adding more materials, right? If you can reduce the material, then we saw lightweighting, then we've seen new materials coming onto the stage. And now what we're seeing is a lot of discussion around, and we saw this earlier, just getting carbon neutrality, or getting being able to present how much carbon it takes to produce this pack. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is, if you've got a product or a pack and it says it's 3 grams of carbon, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, what are you supposed to do with that?
It's more than two.
Yeah. It is. It's more than two.
Less than four, so that's good.
See? We can do math on stage, too. but that's what a lot of brands are asking for. They're all talking about carbon. And this is like the early stage. But it's a lot of that is tied to 2025, which is, you know, the threshold that all the brands are focusing on. But you've got to educate consumers. So I think consumer education is a big trend that we're going to be seeing. Because, again, if you don't know what it means, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and I think the consumer education is the most important part, and that's why what you three are doing is so critical, because it's getting in front of the general consumer to understand why packaging materials are selected, why packaging is designed the way it needs to be, and able to educate the consumers in a way that hasn't been done before. And I think I cannot thank any of you enough for the work that you do, because it's not easy. It's not like you get paid tons of money to do what you're doing.
I've earned $6 on TikTok through the $6, everybody. That's the price of one Bitcoin now, I'm pretty sure.
Did you give each a dollar to each of your kids and then
no, they gotta
keep a dollar?
They got to earn that.
Well, yeah. I thought it was like an investment in their college fund.
No, that's my TikTok channel.
but
that didn't make any sense.
but Corey, what's your perspective?
I would say, talking to people in the audience, raise your hand if you've received a shipment in the last 2 weeks with a box that was much too large for the item that was delivered.
I have.
And look at all those hands go up.
Yeah. Wow. Look at everybody that we can't.
This is what we're working on. And I think this is the feverish goal of today. Nike just announced their one box program, which we're all, I think Kizik did it first. That's okay.
Allbirds kind of also led the way on that a little bit.
Yeah. But they, instead of shipping you two boxes with your shoes, they're shipping you one box. And I think it was 50 million tons or something ridiculous, the amount of material that will be pulled out of the system or unneeded to be used for the world of packaging. One company, one idea, one 50% reduction of corrugated, and that's the kind of thing that we'd like to see more of. And I think that's the kind of thing that we will see more of. We're teaching our customers how to use boxes that are shrinkable. They are multi-layer, multi-depth. So you just cut them and you shrink them down. Then you don't need the void fill. It's just simple things like this. And then that saves them money on freight. And then that saves you money on that freight. So all of these things relate to you, even though we don't realize that as consumers, that all of this stuff really, really does affect us. Until you have to stuff your recycle bin, if you have one, with tons of corrugated that you didn't need and that was overpackaged. So I think that kind of thing is what really gets me excited about it. When I get a delivery or I work with a customer to design a package that is right-sized and minimalist and the right materials and mono materials and all of the things that we're going to talk about today. So,
sweet.
Corrugated.
Yes.
Before, I'm just going to jump in before you say anything, is, you know, if you're here, obviously this is Waste 360. I mean, we're on the front end, and then a lot of people here are on the back end, on the collection side. Yeah. Consumers don't know about collection. Consumers don't know what materials are recyclable, which ones are not recyclable. We've got Nick out here from Scrap, which is an app that you can scan the barcode and it'll tell you if your product is recyclable in your area or not. So there's a lot of innovation happening in that space. But I think from the back end, you can also push education to the consumers as well. As silly as it sounds, I mean, through TikTok, I spoke to a MRF in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they've got a ridiculous TikTok where they've got characters throughout their entire processing plant that are, you know, they're showing you like this is not recyclable. Like this, you know, during Christmas time, you know, people are throwing in their Christmas lights and like the most ridiculous things.
Those aren't recyclable?
No. They are not. But people are learning, you know.
Probably compost.
People are learning through these silly different social media outlets. And the more that you can push information, I mean, I just learned downstairs from the Caterpillar guys, you know, they got a $1.5 million compressor, basically a tractor, these giant tires. I didn't know that you needed like a special set of tires on your tractor to, yep. on your bulldozer,
right.
At landfill. So I learned something. And I think the more that consumers realize what goes into the back end of this, the better decisions they can make as well on the front end.
Yeah, I'll jump off of that because one of my five children is a 14-year-old human, and he's in eighth grade. And I was telling him, I was like, hey, you should check out this video. I think it was like color changing ink on a Mercedes or something like that. And he opens up on my phone TikTok. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why would you do that? He's like, to search for it. Yeah. And I realized, like, I joked about, like, oh, does anyone have a TikTok dance? Because that's kind of, I mean, I'm in my early 40s, so, like, I still am friends with Tom on MySpace, that kind of stuff. I miss my AOL Instant Messenger. If that resonates with anyone here, then cool. But I realized, like, whoa, there's over 1 billion people on the planet that are on TikTok consuming content. Why wouldn't we be there helping to create education? Right. And so I think that that's a big part of innovation is tying in consumer education with where the younger generations are actually consuming the content. Right. You know, we were all sort of webinared, at least I was like webinared to death during COVID. It's like every week there was a new webinar about something. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like we can create a 20-second video on TikTok. So that idea of meeting people where they're at is certainly a kind of an innovation. The innovation from my perspective is a little weird as well, which is availability of materials has become an interesting innovation topic.
Right.
The supply chain crisis is very real. I work for a paper-based manufacturer. We print labels, we print folding cartons and retail displays. And the amount of, it used to be, hey, can I get a quote on this? You know, what's your lead time? And, oh, this other company has this, and so we're gonna go with them. Now it's like frantic, like, do you have 16-point, 18-point, 20, or 24-point SBS board? We could also use clay-coated craft back board. And can you get it to us within 10 weeks? I'll pay you whatever you tell me. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's a different, that's a different dynamic. That's obviously going to shift and ebb and flow. But right now, I've been in the packaging industry for 15 years, and that's been a weird shift to kind of help navigate. So on the back end, if you're seeing a lot of like different materials and you know, different things entering the waste stream, it's because on our side, we're just trying to find available materials that can keep the shelf stocked.
Well, you stole my next question.
Yes.
Was around transition that's happening, and there's a lot of products that are transitioning to paper, and kind of that supply chain related issue is something that is very real, and I can't sit here and say that necessarily on the raw material side of plastics, that supply chain is challenged. But I think on top of that, it's not just straight polyethylene, it's also things like EVOH and other materials that that's been a struggle as well. So let's dive into the what's probably most near and dear to my heart, flexible packaging.
Clemson football.
Clemson football is, yes, yes, you hit the hot button.
I know, you're welcome.
But would love to kind of get everybody's perspective on how do we improve the flexible packaging recycling stream? Because at the end of the day, it's not one material is not going to fix the sustainable journey that we're all on. Flexible packaging, plastic packaging has a place to play. I don't think any of us can, I think we all can agree that we're not going to walk into a room and say that we have the silver bullet because we know we'd be lying. Yeah. But would love to kind of get your perspectives on what is or what needs to happen within flexible recycling.
Awesome. Plastic. I love plastic. So I gotta be like totally truthful here. When we all met on Clubhouse, well, we met before that, but when I met John on Clubhouse, I hated him so much. I'm like, damn it, this guy's face is back on Clubhouse again because he's gonna push plastic so hard.
I still hate him, and I right here.
And it took about 4 or 5 rooms for me to like start going, all right, he's got a point, and then start warming up to him because, again, I'm on the design side, pushing for moving away from plastics, moving into paper, because as a designer, just like consumers, right, we all see all of the news, we see all these different stuff. From the media in terms of like plastic and you know, what it's doing to the planet. But then when we start looking at paper and what, you know, the costs involved in moving from plastics to paper and the value that plastics does, you know, can bring in different areas, you're like, okay, well, there's plenty of room for both these materials to play together. So I've learned a ton about plastics through Jonathan and some of his content. So in terms of like, what can we do? You know, just walking the floor downstairs, meeting this group from Belgium, they're like, we don't recycle all the commodity, you know, the basic commodities. Like, all we focus on are multi-layer packs and multi-layer foiled flexible films. And that's all we recycle. And we're gonna go around the world and find different niches to build processing plants near those supply chains in order to process that and turn it back into a resin that can be reused again for the same material. And again, from the consumer side, consumers picture recycling and waste in a way that we know is not a reality. They think, I put in my cardboard box, I'm gonna get a cardboard box next month that was that box before.
Right.
Like, I wanna put in this plastic bag, it's gonna come back as another plastic bag. But the truth is that that's not what happens, and you guys know that's not the truth, right? I'll take my flexible films to this grocery store. If that gets picked up and processed, it'll come back as a, as like Trex.
Trex, decking,
You know, decking, or it'll turned into adhesives for pavement, like all these different things that it can happen. So it's not coming back. It's not this circular loop that consumers envision. So again, it just goes back to education, right? If from your end, you can push education to consumers, I think you can do a better job of it than the brand scan because you're hitting them with the facts. So what can we do? I think, you know, if we can help brands shift to monomaterials and promote processing that handles some of these more complex things, and then that's definitely something to look at.
And make it easy to recycle. Make the make it so the consumer understands, here's what you do with this.
Yeah.
Now that you've used the product, how do you recycle it? What are the options? And you know, is that a QR code? Is that instructions easily printed on the bag or the material? If we don't tell them how to do it, they'll never do it.
Yeah.
And if we don't give them some incentive on why they should do it, they'll never do it. And it's, you know, we were talking about carbon before. People don't understand what that means. So we have to give them some kind of a reason or a financial incentive. You know, I'm from Oregon, where we have a bottle deposit, and that's been a very successful program for us. So what if we attached a value to all kinds of different packaging materials? And, you know, that money could go back into recycling. And to me, that's something big that could possibly change the world in a big way. You know, states that have those deposit systems have double the recycle rates of states that don't have it. And right now there's only 10 in the US, which is so sad. Why don't we? Come on, let's do that. You know, it works. We've tested it. Let's do that more. Hopefully, eventually there'll be a national deposit system to make it effective for the whole country, and then we take it to other countries. And I'm looking forward to that possibility.
So my answer is just be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it drives me absolutely crazy. I saw this the other day, and I think that this company has now changed it, but I had a coffee bag. And the bag said 60% compostable, 40% polyethylene. And I was like, that means 0% compostable. Like, what are you trying to do here?
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to convince the general public that you have some sort of like cool, nice thing. It's a paper poly coffee bag. Like, stop pretending to be something other than you're not. So if currently, right now, if your material means we don't have the infrastructure to handle it, please, for the love of all things holy, put in the landfill. Like, do not recycle, put into the trash. Don't put like the resin code number 7 or whatever it is that gets put on there that nobody actually does anything with. Like, we need to be clear and honest in our communication on the packaging.
Yeah.
And we also need to be clear and honest from our perspective as people who work in the material and in the packaging when we sell to our customers, because oftentimes our customers, and I don't know if anyone here, you know, works for a brand, but oftentimes the education is coming from the point of contact at the manufacturer, the distributor, the designer. And there are too many salespeople out there who are just trying to get a sale, and they'll let the consumer or the prospect put whatever is legal on the packaging.
Right.
Instead of being able to say, like, I work for a company that makes paper-based packaging, and there are gonna be plenty of times where I'm gonna be talking with a customer, talking with a prospect, and I should be able to go, you know what? Paper is the wrong material for this, and you need to look at a stand-up pouch. Mm-hmm. You need to look at flexible packaging, and let me tell you why. And we could go run a life cycle analysis on it. Whether it's glass, whether it's aluminum, we should be material agnostic. Mm-hmm. And focus on doing the primary function of what packaging should do, and that is to protect the product and get it from point A to point B with as little waste as possible, with no returns, with no, like, it's this stuff. Everyone wants to like talk about all of this, you know, these things that hopefully will happen in the future. But I'm like, right now, today, let's just be honest.
Right.
Yeah. And speak with truth and conviction and clarity. And please, if there's anybody here who works in the packaging industry like we do, be willing to say no. And be willing to build out your network to say, talk to my man, Plastic is fantastic, because he's got a really solid thing going for you. And yes, I work for a paper-based company, and I'm good with it.
Yeah, like, so what I always say, and hopefully this was a line that that helped to disarm Avelio from hating me, but at the end of the day, I went to school for packaging. And you learn about all different materials and you understand the science and the facts in material selection and selecting those materials for the right reasons. And that's why I will say that there is many applications where plastic is being overused and overconsumed and could be, there is alternatives that are out there. Plastic is not the silver bullet to solve every problem or every challenge, but you've got to do the homework. You've got to understand why you're selecting those materials and be educated on that as a someone who is promoting the product, but also somebody who's consuming that product, who's buying that product from a brand, and always have the total life cycle analysis at the forefront of the conversation, making sure that that's driving the decision.
Right. Yeah. I'll give you an example actually from this morning. So I flew in this morning from Salt Lake City, and I was in the Delta Club, and they have their utensils, right? The single-use utensils.
Fancy.
And on, it's very fancy. I know. And one of them, the flexible film said, certified for industrial composting. And if you go look in the Sky Club at Salt Lake City, there's no place to put industrial compost, but it's green, it's got little green leaves on it. And if you look in the recycle bin, guess what's in the recycle bin? All of these things are in there. Yeah. Then they had another one that it was the same material, but it wasn't green, it was clear, and it said, made from renewable resources. And I'm like, okay. And if you look, those are not in the recycle bin, those are sitting in the main kind of municipal waste. And I thought, well, good, at least it's the same stuff.
Right.
They colored it a little bit different, and they just said made from renewable materials, not industrially compostable, which we can't really do in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, so that was I was gonna ask you a follow-up question, but you're also,
you're reading
my notes, aren't you?
I exist in the future.
Oh, all right. Well, but I wanna get everybody's kind of opinion in regard to compostable packaging and its place to play within our realm of things. My number one concern when it comes to compostable is, does compostable packaging actually enable a circular economy? That's where the major concern from my standpoint is, but would love to kind of get your perspectives on compostable.
What do you guys think about compostable? Is compostable good? Put your hand up.
Throw your hands in the air and wave them around as if there are no reasons.
Is compostable bad? Put your hands in the air.
Bad.
Oh, there's, we got a battle royal. I mean, from my perspective and what I've learned speaking to different MRFs, is that compostable, and I could be totally wrong because I'm just a designer, what do I know? Compostable can damage the recycling stream, mm-hmm. right? Because it's meant to break down, and it's not meant to degrade, to biodegrade, but it is meant to degrade. So all of a sudden the quality of the material is lessened, and then the value of that product is lessened. Okay. So in that perspective, that isn't good, right? Because now you're damaging a waste stream. There's no collection. There's very little collection. And then in order to actually process it, like, who's on the back end trying to purchase that stuff? Like, who's looking mm-hmm. for,
PCR, PLA?
Compost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just plastic compost.
Yeah, I agree. It's we're not there yet. The concept is awesome, and I support it, but we're not ready yet for it. I posted a poll on LinkedIn. I know everybody loves polls on LinkedIn, right? Raise your hand if you love polls. I'm sure you answer all of them, but I asked, what would you do with compostable packaging to dispose of it? And 37% said recycle it, and 42% said put in the garbage. And it was just, it just proved the point of people don't know what to do with it yet. The concept's awesome. I love the idea. Its potential is huge, but we're not there yet. I'd like to focus on recycling for now.
And I think that's the key, is the focus on recycling, and we have to bring the consumers along for the ride on this journey, on the sustainable packaging journey that we're on. We have to educate them. And the big thing when it comes to composting is the low percentage of access to industrial composting inside the U.S. is, I believe it's less than 4 or less than 6. I don't know what my numbers are.
Well, and Tom Zaki, who wrote a book, collaborated on a book called The Future of Packaging, kind of gave an example about compostable packaging, where he said you're given a choice to eat as a person. You're given a corrugated box, and you're given a salad. Which do you choose to eat? Technically, both are edible. You can eat a corrugated box or starch, you know, starch void fill or whatever it is. Like, you can consume that. But what are you going to choose to eat? And that's, I thought that was a pretty good analysis. I mean, it's the education within the industry, within kind of consumers is so rough. To your point, I was at an event in Utah, it's called Silicon Slopes, and it was like the smart people are there. So Mark Zuckerberg, you may have heard of him, he's got an internet startup. He was the keynote speaker. The year before, I think Tim Cook spoke. Like, it's a big tech event full of really smart people who know stuff way more about things than I do. But I only knew about one thing, and I was walking around, and same thing. I like to look in the recycle bins to see what's going on. And at this event, they were handing out PLA compostable cups that you could get free water with. And when you walked around, the recycling bins were overflowing with these cups because the cups, again, they're branded to feel very green, like I'm doing a really good job, I'm helping out the environment, and so what do? I recycle. That's what good environmental people do. And so they loaded up the recycle bins with these compostable PLA cups, and it's like, this is not, we're not winning right now. This is a bad step. Yep. So I agree, it's a tough one. I worked for a company that converted compostable flexible films into stand-up pouches and stick packs. And inevitably, every time we would test it out, they were 8 to 10 times more expensive. And the oxygen barrier was worse. The moisture, the water barrier was worse. The oxygen barrier was worse. The product would deteriorate. The powders would clump up. The shelf life was degraded. And I was like, so you can have a worse product that's going to have a lower shelf life, and you can spend 8 to 10 times more money, which meant more commission for me. And so, there's no waste stream. So if that's your choice, or we could look at PCR content and in a standard film that isn't going to have a great end of life story, but it's actually encouraging recycling and waste. So it's a, and I would make less money.
Yeah. But I'd say, you know, Landsberg was started in Australia or based in Australia. Yep. I think Australia's banned compostables, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of countries are moving in that direction of not allowing compostable plastics because of that reason, right? It just doesn't make sense financially for them to use it.
Yeah.
So there's no reason that we can't kind of go in that same direction, or at least push brands from your side, from the back end, saying we don't want this material. And then just saying it loud enough that hopefully we start getting the brands to understand that that's not a good solution, that that's not the right direction. Now, if you're in compostables, I'm sorry, but you know, it's kind of the way it rolls.
One of the things that we haven't talked about yet, which is a incredibly critical thing, so we've talked about the consumer, but we also have to talk about the bans that are coming, legislation.
He said bans, like the bans that are coming into town. I was like, let's talk about.
No, the legislation.
The legislative bans. Got it.
Okay. And education of all of the legislators on why and how these policies that seem very easy, and it's very easy to check a box,
right,
but why they need to listen to the science and the facts that supports these materials, and why they've been selected and how they've been selected. And it's very easy for somebody to say, well, everything should just be compostable. Well, that then becomes, to a certain extent, a license to litter for some people.
Yeah.
But as far as that legislative conversation, I mean, there's things going on in pretty much, I think there's like 39 or somewhere around 39 different bills, EPR bills that are currently being discussed, and we have to make sure that we have a voice. What do you think is, what are some of your ideas and how we can do that?
I voted Kanye West for.
Same.
No, nobody. Okay. I mean, the hardest part about the legislation is it's so disparate from state to state to state to state, which it reminds. So I used to live in Colorado, and I was there when cannabis, like recreational medical cannabis, came around. And for those of you who are familiar with that industry, it's regulated by each state. And so anytime you want to move into another state, you have to know their state laws, their state labeling laws, their packaging laws, all that stuff. I'm fearful that we might end up, unless there is a federal stance on this, mm-hmm. where if I have a brand and I'm selling into California and Texas and Vermont and Kansas and Wyoming, and my brand is everywhere, I'm gonna have to figure out how do I make my packaging so that it is meeting the most harshest state laws so that I'm still able to sell into that state,
yeah.
which increases the price that everybody else has to pay in a lot of cases. So I'm hopeful that there might be some type of federal, there's a federal step in on a lot of this, because mm-hmm. a lot of the laws are kind of crazy that seem to be happening. They're forcing brands to be like, I talked to somebody from a large meat company, and they're like, they're banning our meat trays, which means that we have to put our meat trays into a totally different material in order to sell to a large market. And if we do that, there's already inflationary pressures on food, and it's just going to increase our, we have to retrofit everything in order to accommodate this. So
yeah,
a lot of it is well-intentioned people, I think. I like to believe they're well-intentioned, who are only listening to an echo chamber telling them what they should believe.
Yes. I think extended producer responsibility can affect very positive change if it's done correctly. I think Oregon and Maine are passing laws, and other states will follow quickly. But Adam's right. They're all going to be different. And how do we accommodate all of them? Well, you find the one that's the most specific and the harshest, and they do that. So why don't we just make that the law and make it national? It's like Prop 65 labeling. Have you ever seen one of those? Those are only supposed to go to California, but companies just got fed up with it and just put them on everything. Mm-hmm. And consumers, most of them don't even know what it means. You know, with Prop 65, I don't know what that means.
And we have to watch what we do with regard to labeling, and so that basically these packages don't become NASCAR. I mean, if you look at all the different logos and labels on a NASCAR, I mean, and then you think you're going to have a recycled content logo, a how to recycle logo, a advanced recycle logo, and all these other additional logos, like, where's there any room? Where's that, all that prime real estate billboard space that we oftentimes talk about? It's shrinking and shrinking. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that has to be watched out.
I work for a label printing company. I'm pro extra labels.
Should we make some time for some questions?
Yes, that's where I was gonna go next, if there's any questions.
Okay, I think we have two questions.
Yeah!
All right.
I met the minimum threshold. I was like, can we at least get two questions? Can we be interesting enough?
Two out of the five people. hi, my name is Claire. I'm from a small town in Canada, Kamloops, BC. I work at a university in the sustainability office, and we're pretty lucky in the sense that we have industrial composting in a town very close, so we contract out to them. And we also have about 27 diversion streams that keep waste out of landfill. So we do a pretty good job. We try really hard. But one of the things that, as we were talking about compostable items, one of the things that I do in my own life is I use compostable bags for my garbage. I live a pretty low waste lifestyle, but still have landfill that I need to put in the dumpster every once in a while. So I'm just I don't know if it's a question or just a conversational topic, but to expand a little bit on those items that can't be recycled in my municipality, things like plastic cutlery are not accepted in any recycling stream. You have to landfill that. So getting a compostable alternative that when it breaks down or doesn't break down in a landfill, at least it's not leaching chemical into our waterways or having birds or something eat them. So maybe just a bit of conversation around packaging that ends up in landfill regardless or more often than recycled, and whether or not that could be either non-toxic, biodegradable, or compostable.
So there's a lot of questions in there.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of hot topics. So, Jonathan, if a trash bag is compostable, will it compost in a landfill?
To my knowledge, no.
Right. Is there a benefit to having it be a compostable plastic in the landfill? And I'm asking this because I'd like to know too.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Typical plastic.
Making the consumer feel better about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, you know, the alternative to that is, you know, you get a regular, LDPE trash bag, and put your trash in there and it goes to landfill. What's going to happen to the LDPE film at the landfill?
It's going to stay for a while.
Same as a compostable. And then is that LDPE film going, is there anything in LDPE that could leach out, right? Because we hear about plastics and toxicity.
Right.
Is there anything toxic about LDPE film in and of itself?
No.
Yeah. And this is why I didn't like him, right? Plastic is bad. What are you talking about? It's toxic.
Yeah.
And I knew nothing about plastic. I just knew that I hated it, mm-hmm. and that plastic was bad. And come to find out, a lot of plastics don't have anything toxic in them unless you've actually put toxic chemicals in them for different purposes.
Right, right. One thing that I would say in regards to an opportunity that you have as a university, and universities across the country, across in Canada, US, have this opportunity, is that you have captive audience in a sense that you can easily implement collection and small collection programs. If you think about e-commerce packaging, and you just focus on e-commerce packaging, and you have students in dorms that are all getting deliveries from Amazon. You can collect all those flexible materials and start to enable a circular economy, and these programs can be those small steps in your communities that can eventually evolve into bigger programs. When you look at how many home parcel deliveries before the pandemic, it was around 150 in the US. Now it's over 200 per household. Those are 200 opportunities to collect those flexible materials, but universities particularly have that captive audience and can easily and create opportunities to drive those mini circular economies.
Was there one more question?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure we got time. Hopefully that was moderately helpful, like 42% helpful.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking through some of the sessions we've had, and we talk a lot about innovation and collaboration and education, and you know, social media is very national, so what you're doing is hitting a lot of people, but when we go to, instead of top down, bottom up on education, how do we bring continuity among what you're saying and how it matches to the states? When you're also going up against innovation within, let's say, the public sector. How do we kind of meet in the middle to move towards that?
The government needs to watch our TikToks, I think. Is that it? Is that what you're saying?
Probably.
I think that's what she's saying.
No.
No. I mean, I think, you know, what do they say? Think globally, act locally.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I know when I share things, I'm speaking about Arizona, and if I am speaking about a different region, I'm going to go ahead and be like super specific about that. But like I said, there's the Appleton, Wisconsin Recycling Center that has an amazing tech talk. They're speaking about locally, because there are so many different variations of this information that I think each one of us can kind of fine tune that.
And I'll give a plug again to the Scrap app and some other things that are using technology to help bring education in conjunction with consumers and local municipalities. And there's a whole bunch of stuff happening, you know, not only with Scrap and, I don't know, Mikey, do you want to raise your hand there? If you guys want to connect up with him, he's doing some incredible work.
Yep.
There's a game right now called Harmonia that's coming out that's leveraging NFTs to help people recycle properly within their network and plant trees and do some stuff like that. So there's going to be some connections, and we're right at the starting point, I feel like, of where we're going to be in, you know, 5, 7, 10 years. Yeah. We're out of time, though.
Yeah.
We are.
Way out of time.
But this was awesome.
Thank you all.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for having us up here. And they left 3 bananas for us, which is really nice.
We have how many bananas?
Three.
No, so. Thanks. I needed 4. That was a good writer. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.